America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks for listening. This week there is a Senate hearing on sexual harassment in the military, a problem that has not been solved despite repeated stories like an Army Sergeant First Class assigned to the Sexual Assault Prevention Unit at Fort Hood, Texas, who's now being investigated for alleged sexual assault. In early May, an Air Force officer who worked with an assault prevention unit charged with sexual battery after being accused of grabbing a woman and groping her butt and her chest in a parking lot not far from their office. There was the story of three U.S. Navy Academy football players under investigation, an alleged sex assault involving a female midshipman in an off-campus football house party last April. Last night, CNN reported on a senior Army officer, Michael Harrison, a major general, suspended for his alleged mishandling of suspected sexual abuse. President Obama said in a commencement exercise at the Naval Academy on May 24th, quote, "Those who commit sexual assault are not only committing a crime, they threaten the trust and discipline that makes our military strong." This week at that hearing, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York said point blank to the generals on sexual assault, "You have lost the trust of the men and women who rely on you that you will bring justice." Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri blocked a promotion for America's first military woman in space, Lieutenant General Susan Helms, who's a former astronaut. She's up for promotion to become Vice Commander of the Air Force Space Command, but McCaskill blocked that, citing Helms' decision to overturn a sexual assault conviction of an Air Force captain at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California. All of these stories just in the last few months. This is an ongoing problem that the Service Women's Action Network has been trying to fight against. Greg Jacob is their policy director and joins me now here on America Weekend. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me.
You were a Marine. I hate to put that in the past tense because every Marine tells me once a Marine, always a Marine. So you're a Marine, and you were a commander, and you actually witnessed this sort of stuff going on and the military's failure to deal with it, right?
Yes, that's correct. I had a staff NCO in my unit when I was a company commander in an integrated training company who was running around and assaulting and harassing students, and there were about 80 witnesses to the fact. We did an investigation. It went up the chain of command, and then at the end of the day, the school colonel just transferred this staff NCO back to an all-male infantry unit by saying basically that he was unsuitable for an integrated training environment. So the whole case disappeared and got swept under the rug.
Does integrated training mean men and women?
Yes. I had half of my students were women. I had about 200 students that were women, and then half of my training cadre were women.
So the guy in charge said, well, let's just put him in a male-only training unit instead of saying, you know what, that is not acceptable, and we will not have people like that in our military?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is a criminal offense. I mean, we're talking about assault of behavior, which should be treated as a crime and should be prosecuted as a crime. And it's looked upon in the military more as sort of a lapse in judgment or somebody making a bad choice rather than looking at it as criminal behavior.
So as policy director for the Service Women's Action Network, what do you want done?
Well, we see this really affecting the military in three areas. The first is within the area of the victims' protection and victims' rights. So we like to see expansion of victims' protections within the military to include to make those similar to what they are in the civilian sector under the Crime Victim Rights Act. The second area we see is a huge lack of effort in prosecuting these crimes. So we'd like to see the ability to refer cases to a court martial to be moved from a commander to a military prosecutor. So basically a trained lawyer is holding the keys of the courthouse. And the third thing we're seeing is in the veterans community, there's a real issue with survivors of sexual trauma getting disability claims from the VA. So we'd like to see that process amended as well.
So I want to go back to one of those, which is taking the commanders out of the decision-making process. Go into detail on how it works now, and is it like the case that you described that you ran into where, you know, some guy just says, oh, okay, I'll take care of the boy, and he moves him aside the way the Catholic Church did with some pedophile priests?
That's exactly right, and that's a really good parallel between the military and the Catholic Church. The way military system works right now is that if an individual makes a report of a sexual assault, it's investigated by the military's independent criminal investigative services. After that investigation is completed, the results of that investigation are given to the commanding officer, who is the person who has the authority to review that case and decide whether it goes to trial. In the civilian realm here, like, for instance, here in New York, that decision would be made by the district attorney's office or by a county attorney's office someplace else. So you would have a trained prosecutor that's gone to law school that has at least, 5 to 10 years of prosecutorial experience under his belt in order to make those kinds of decisions. So what happens now is it goes to the commander, who has no legal training whatsoever. Well, he goes to a week-long how to be a good commander lawyer course, but that's about it. And then he's the one who makes those decisions. He's the one who picks the judge. He's the one who picks the jury. And at the end of the day, he's the one who reviews the results of the court-martial and can set aside findings or reduce sentences. So it's a completely command-centric environment. And the problem with that is that it creates a biased system. There's no impartiality because that commander that's making those decisions happens to be the commander of the individual who's accused of the crime.
And we would never have this in the private sector. You wouldn't have the CEO of IBM or Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook or the guy who runs a local Pepsi bottling plant be allowed by local law enforcement to do that.
That's exactly right. I mean, the linchpin behind any fair criminal justice system is that it's impartial. I mean, as individuals, we have a right to an impartial jury of our peers. And that's because as individuals, we need due process protections from the state. Otherwise, anybody in a position of authority can levy charges against us, and we wouldn't have the ability to adequately defend ourselves. And that's really the key to this whole issue, and that's the reason why a lot of foreign militaries have taken this out of the hands of commanders and given it to professional prosecutors, because the accused isn't able to get a fair trial.
Yep. Speaking of the way it's handled in other places, Senator Gene Shaheen asked the brass this week when they were on that panel at the Senate hearing if they had reviewed the way the UK and Canada and Israel have programs that take the sexual assault response away from commanders. And the guy who's the head of the Navy said, no, we haven't looked at that. How is it possible they haven't looked at that, Greg?
Yeah, we find that amazing, too, because we've been advocating for that change for more than 3.5 years, and the military has been pushing back. So the fact they admit that they haven't even looked at it is just ridiculous. And the whole notion that a commander needs to have court-martial administration authority in order to command his troops is just completely false. I mean, as a commander in the United States Marine Corps for 10 years, I was in combat, and it didn't help me at all. And, to have prosecutorial authority. I was able to charge the hill, and my troops were able to do their job. We were able to win the wars we were fighting without me being able to prosecute rape cases or murder cases or aggravated assault cases. So the idea that those two things are connected are absolutely ridiculous. And if it's so undermining to good order and discipline not to have commanders in charge of that process, we fight right alongside, shoulder to shoulder on the battlefield with countries that don't have command-centric systems. So if the good order and discipline is so bad, why are we willing to trust these other countries to fight alongside of us in military operations if their military has just gone to pot since they've made these changes? It's an absolute ridiculous argument.
When I was citing some of the recent cases, and by the way, in 2012, there were 26,000 cases of unwanted sexual contact from groping all the way up to rape. 26,000 just last year alone. That's 35% more than 2 years earlier. But when I was mentioning some of those, I was talking about some of the people who were assigned to sexual assault prevention units. What does that tell you about training?
Well, what that tells us is that clearly the military doesn't take this issue as seriously as it should. You mentioned Senator Shaheen. She has a bill that she introduced which would make sexual assault oversight positions and what they call nominative positions, which means that the individual being selected for that position would go through a screening process. There was a case where there was a gentleman who was being investigated for domestic violence and had what they call a military protective order, a restraining order that was issued by his wife, and he was still in charge of this sexual assault prevention response unit on this base. So clearly here's a gentleman who has issues with violence against women, who is being investigated for criminal conduct himself, and he was in charge of taking care of these victims that were coming forward to report these crimes.
I wonder if any of these military men who are making these bad decisions are thinking about their own wives, their own daughters, and their own sisters, who are some of the people who are dealing with this. When you talk 26,000 in a year, that is a ridiculous number. Greg, I thank you for joining me, and I wish you good luck with your work.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Greg Jacob, Policy Director for the Service Women's Action Network. I'm Paul Harris. A reminder that we are on all of your social media. Check our Facebook page. Tweet us at Twitter, at America Weekend. Email me, paul@americaweekend.com. And listen to us on your radio every Saturday and Sunday from the Envision Radio Networks. America.